Chapter 54, The Three Evil Things. Segment 1. In my dream, in my last morning dream, I stood today on a promontory beyond the world. I held a pair of scales and weighed the world. Alas, that rosy dawn came too early to me. She glowed me awake, the jealous one. Jealous is she always of the glows of my morning dream. Measurable by him who has time, weighable by a good weigher, attainable by strong pinions, divinable by divine nutcrackers. Thus did my dream find the world. My dream, a bold sailor, half ship, half hurricane, silent as the butterfly, impatient as the falcon. How had it the patience and leisure today for world weighing? Did my wisdom perhaps speak secretly to it? My laughing, wide-awake day wisdom, which mocks at all infinite worlds. For it says, where force is, there becomes number, the master. It has more force. How confidently did my dream contemplate this finite world? Not newfangedly, not oldfangedly, not timidly, not entreatingly, as if a big round apple presented itself to my hand. A ripe golden apple with a coolly soft, velvety skin. Thus did the world present itself to me. As if a tree nodded to me, a broad-branched, strong-willed tree, curved as a recline on a footstool for weary travelers. Thus did the world stand on my promontory. As if delicate hands carried a casket towards me. A casket open for the delectation of modest, adoring eyes. Thus did the world present itself before me today. Not riddle enough to scare human love from it. Not solution enough to put to sleep human wisdom. A humanly good thing was the world to me today, of which such bad things are said. How I thank my morning dream that I thus, at today's dawn, weighed the world. As a humanly good thing did it come to me, this dream and heart comforter. And that I may do the like by day, and imitate and copy it its best, now will I put the three worst things on the scales, and weigh them humanly well. He who taught to bless, taught also to curse. What are the three best cursed things in the world? These will I put on the scales. Voluptuousness, passion for power, and selfishness. These three things have hitherto been best cursed, and have been in worst and falsest repute. These three things will I weigh humanly well. Well, here is my promontory, and there is the sea. It rolls here to me, shaggily and fawningly, the old, faithful, hand-headed dog monster that I love. Well, here will I hold the scales over the weltering sea, and also a witness do I choose to look on. You, the anchorite tree. You, the strong adored broad arch tree that I love. On what bridge goes the now to the hereafter? By what constraint does the high stoop to the low? And what enjoins even the highest still to grow upwards? Now stand the scales posed and at rest. Three heavy questions have I thrown in. Three heavy answers carries the other scale. Segment 2. Voluptuousness. To all hair-shirted despisers of the body, a sting and stake, and cursed is the world by all back-worldsmen, for it mocks and befools all erring, misinferring teachers. Voluptuousness. To the rabble, the slow fire at which it is burnt, to all wormy wood, to all stinking rags, the prepared heat and stew furnace. Voluptuousness. To free hearts, a thing innocent and free, the garden happiness of the earth. All the future's thanks overflow to the present. Voluptuousness. Only to the withered a sweet poison. To the lion-willed, however, the great cordial and the reverently saved wine of wines. Voluptuousness. The great symbolic happiness of a higher happiness and highest hope. For to many is marriage promised, and more than marriage. to many that are more unknown to each other than man and woman? And who has fully understood how unknown to each other are man and woman? Voluptuousness. But I will have hedges around my thoughts, and even around my words, lest swine and libertine should break into my gardens. Passion for power. The glowing scourge of the hardest of the heart hard. The cruel torture reserved for the cruelest themselves. The gloomy flame of living pyres. Passion for power. The wicked gadfly which is mounted on the vainest peoples. The scorner of all uncertain virtue, which rides on every horse and on every pride. Passion for power. The earthquake which breaks and unbreaks all that is rotten and hollow. The rolling, rumbling, punitive demolisher of whited sepulchres. The flashing interrogative sign beside premature answers. Passion for power. Before whose glance man creeps and crouches and drudges, and becomes lower than the serpent and the swine, until at last great contempt cries out of him. Passion for power, the terrible teacher of great contempt, which preaches to their face, to cities and empires. Away with you, until a voice cries out of themselves, away with me. Passion for power, which, however, mounts alluringly even to the pure and lonesome, and up to self-satisfied elevations, glowing like a love that paints purple felicities alluringly on earthly heavens. Passion for power. But who would call it passion when the height longs to stoop for power? Verily, nothing sick or diseased is there in such longing and descending. That the lonesome height may not forever remain lonesome and self-sufficing. That the mountains may come to the valleys, and the winds of the heights to the plains. Oh, who would find the right prenomen and honoring name for such longing? Bestowing virtue. Thus did Zarathustra once name the unnameable. And then it happened also, and verily it happened for the first time, that his word blessed selfishness, the wholesome, healthy selfishness that springs from the powerful soul. From the powerful soul, to which the high body appertains, the handsome, triumphing, refreshing body, around which everything becomes a mirror. The pliant, persuasive body, the dancer, whose symbol and epitome is the self-enjoying soul. Of such bodies and soul, the self-enjoyment calls itself virtue. With its words of good and bad, does such self-enjoyment shelter itself as with sacred groves? With the names of its happiness does it banish from itself everything contemptible. Away from itself does it banish everything cowardly. It says bad. That is cowardly. Contemptible seem to it the ever solicitous, the sighing, the complaining, and whoever picked the most trifling advantage. It also despises all bittersweet wisdom. For verily, there is no wisdom that blooms in the dark. A nightshade wisdom, which ever sighs all in vain. Shy distrust is regarded by it as base, and everyone who wants oaths instead of looks and hands. Also, all over distrustful wisdom, for such is the mode of cowardly souls. Baser still, it regards the obsequious doggish one, who immediately lies on his back, the submissive one. And there is also wisdom that is submissive, and doggish, and pious, and obsequious. Hateful to it altogether and a loathing is he who will never defend himself, he who swallows down poisonous spittle and bad looks, the all-too-patient one, the all-endurer, the all-satisfied one, for that is the mode of slaves. Whether they be servile before gods and divine spurnings, or before men and stupid human opinions, at all kinds of slaves does it spit this blessed selfishness. Bad. Thus does it call all that is spirit-broken and sordidly servile, constrained, blinking eyes, depressed hearts, and the false submissive style which kisses with broad, cowardly lips. And spurious wisdom, so does it call all the wit that slaves and hoary-headed and weary ones affect, and especially all the cunning, spurious-witted, curious-witted foolishness of priests. The spurious wise, however, all the priests, the world-weary, and those whose souls are effeminate and servile nature. Oh, how has their game all along abused selfishness? And precisely that was to be virtue and was to be called virtue, to abuse selfishness. And selfless, so did they wish themselves with good reason, all those world-weary cowards and cross-spiders. But to all those comes now the day, the change, the sword of judgment, the great noontide. Then shall many things be revealed. And he who proclaims the ego wholesome and holy, and selfishness blessed, verily, he the prognosticator speaks also what he knows. Behold, it comes, it is near, the great noontide. Thus spoke Zarathustra.